Welcome to the Renaissance, with poets, painters, and bon vivants, and merry minstrels who stroll the streets of London, a strumming their lutes
in puffy pants and pointy leather boots.
Welcome to the Renaissance, where we ooh and ah you with ambiance. We're so progressive,
the latest and the greatest, we bring it to you
with much ado.
Welcome to the Renaissance,
where everything is new.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or tablet or phone. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 457, Something's More Rotten.
Ladies and gentlemen, all the way from Stratford-upon-Avon, the king of couplets, the sultan of sonnets, the man who put the I am in iambic pentameter, please put your hands together for the one, the only, William Shakespeare!
Thank you! Is it good to see me at once?
I'm on an 18!
You kicked a full horn!
Okay, okay! Here's one for all you beautiful tutors out there. A little sonnet that's been very good to me. Let's see if you know it. Shall I compare thee
to a summer's day?
Yeah, thou art more lovely and more temperate, and the rough wind shake the darling buds of May. Yeah, and summer's lease
hath all too short a date.
I adore the adoration, though others may have called it. It's quite the new sensation. What shall we call it? Can you feel it?
Yeah! That was Christian Borle as rock star William Shakespeare in the Broadway musical hit Something Rotten, which if you heard last week's podcast or follow me on Twitter, you already know I thought was fantastic. I was lucky enough to talk to three of the stars and original cast members of Something Rotten, my old friend Brad Oscar, my recent good friend John Cariani, and my very close personal friend of 2 weeks ago, Heidi Blickenstaff, about the creation of this original Broadway musical. We heard part one of our conversation in last week's episode, in which Brad referred to the Broadway community, which he calls his little village of Onatefka. To bring it round again to community, had you guys worked with each other before?
Brad and I did Adam's Family together. Is it like, are we on 3 years ago now?
Yeah, 2011.
Yeah.
3 years ago, yeah.
Okay.
Yes, so Heidi and I worked together.
I knew these guys. I just knew who you were.
And we worked? No, yeah, exactly. No, we had never worked together, John and I.
But we
and
did a lot of readings of this together.
Yes, yes.
And but that's the thing, this little village of Onatefka, you all know everybody. Because
we all have the same
and
agent.
I knew John. Oh, yeah, we now all have the same agent. That's good, yes. So, yeah. But no, I mean, I knew of John, of course, and had, you know, loved his work.
I knew
and
Brad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's an amazing, I mean, I think we all, as we talked about before at the beginning of this, you know, we are just, it's a group of just total professionals. Everybody gets it, has been doing it for, you know, a lot of us a very long time, and everybody really shows up nightly and gets it. And I think, like John said, it's why we can sort of live on the edge as far as this kind of comedy, because again, we're up there with very funny people. I mean, people who nightly could, you know, mix it up 1,000 times and, But yeah, still managed to really walk the line. I think the show is in pretty damn good shape at this point because it could very easily start to get a little out of control. And I think we all have our inner, which isn't to say that at any given moment something doesn't happen.
No.
But I really think that the show will continue to be as sharp and clean in that way, which this kind of comedy needs to be.
Well, we're also chasing it. Like, we all chase it. Like, we don't like it when we don't land them. You know, we don't land our jokes.
Right.
And I feel
yeah.
like everybody's into, like, I just love it when Christian comes off after Willpower sometimes and he's like, oh God, I gotta. And he just goes up to his room because you can tell he didn't feel like he
oh no
did what he wanted to do, and that's neat You know, yeah. And I think you guys are always assessing how musical went.
Sure. When you come off. Can't help it, I guess. When you do something 8 times a week, you can't help but be critical of yourself or the audience or whatever, because it lives and breathes. And, you know, it's so much a part of who we are, what we do, you know, ego in the pure sense, that, yeah, it can be sort of a mind trip at times, especially with comedy, because it is an exchange of energy with an audience, unlike you get with a drama or whatever.
Absolutely.
So we do tend to be, I think, a little more hypercritical. And I often tell myself that's absurd, because we know they're having a good time, and one sound that you get from a random group of, you know, 1,500 people does not indicate how everyone is or is not feeling about the evening they're having.
Yeah, so. You guys are sensitive to the nuances of audience reactions in a way that we don't know. We're just going, God, this is great. You know? No,
I'm sure you experienced that with RSC, right?
Oh, constant.
Constantly. You know,
to remind yourself.
That one jerk in the front row who's just glaring at you without a smile on his face, you go, what the hell's the matter with that guy?
That's right. I had two people in the front row who would not stand up. The entire place was standing up. And there were two people in the front, and you're like, really?
Well, you know what? We were lame. We didn't all stand up either at our show, I don't think. I thought we were kind of a lame Tuesday night crowd. You know, so I apologize on behalf of our audience for not leaping to our feet.
That's okay.
Thank you.
It's all right.
What can I ask? What changed between the?
Yes, I mean, the biggest practical change that happened was there was a song that existed. I think there were 4 songs originally that Wayne and Carrie wrote. They are the Kirkpatrick brothers, and they wrote 4 original songs, and I think only one of them survives, if I'm correct, and that is Welcome to the Renaissance. Mm-hmm. I think that's true.
Oh, really? Oh, in the
right. Mm-hmm. One of the other 4 songs was a beautiful quartet that my character started to sing called Lovely Love. And it happened in the second act, and it was such a seductive melody, one of the most beautiful songs I've ever heard. And when Casey called me to ask me if I was interested in doing this, which is a joke, because I was like, twist my arm. But I listened to Lovely Love, and I read the script. And when I heard Lovely Love, I was like, oh, my God, if I get to sing that song on Broadway, that will be a dream come true. And I think all of us were so seduced with how beautiful that song was.
And it was Bea, and then Nick, her husband, came in. Bea, and then Portia, who plays my love interest, and then Nick, her husband, and then I came in at the end, and at the end it was this big, beautiful quartet.
Yeah, the swelling, gorgeous thing. But the problem with Lovely Love is that it did not propel the story forward, and it was a reflection on falling in love with our love interests. And the show kind of came to a screeching halt, and even though everyone loved it, Casey one day pulled us aside. And I mean, I was terrified, because it was during that time where things were changing so quickly, and I couldn't keep any solid food inside of me. Like, it was just a wild time. And I was like, what's it going to be today, Casey? And he pulled us into the wing, and he said, we're cutting Lovely Love. And I literally said out loud in front of my Broadway director, oh my God, no! Like a Spanish soap opera, like some kind of crazy, like ridiculous. I couldn't believe it came out of my mouth, because, you know, but we that's how we couldn't
there.
Believe it.
Yeah.
But he said, we're going to keep it in for tonight, and then just make sure we've made the right decision, and then tomorrow we think it'll be out. And I literally went to my dressing room and sobbed. And then as the days wore on and Lovely Love went away, I realized they were right.
Yeah.
And I think Carrie said it the best, that everyone loved that song except the show. And they replaced it with a reprise of my first song.
Right.
And now John and I have this very sweet bench scene where we're talking about Nick, and I'm trying to bolster John's character to get back in there and, you know, fight for his brother. And it makes much more sense, and it jettisons John's character back into the action. And Lovely Love just stopped it all. So as much as we hated to let it go, it was definitely the right thing to do. And that's where Casey Nicholaw kicks ass, because that would not have been gone except for Casey's courage.
Right.
Because everyone else was like, we're going to sit back and relax and enjoy the dulcet tones of this song.
Right.
But it suddenly asked the audience to take the show seriously, in a show that we weren't asking them to take seriously. And I think that's what one of my friends said that, and I thought that was a perfect way to put it.
Well, and you guys are experienced enough to know that it wasn't about how you were doing it. Or do even experienced Broadway performers like yourselves go, wait a second, it must be about me?
Sure. I mean...
Well, but in a case like that, I think it was pretty clear that it was just for the show. Because, my God, you had four glorious voices. I mean, again, we all loved, there was nothing wrong with the song.
Right.
Other than, its place in the show and the fact that...
You sounded really good together.
Yeah. We have, thank God, we have the Sitz Probe on tape. So we have it with the full orchestra. We all have recordings of it, which is lovely.
It needs to be a bonus feature on the CD.
No, I know. We fought for that. But Wayne...
It's going to another show.
It is?
I think so.
Well, they said they wanted to keep it and maybe use it again.
Which I think is great. I mean, Wayne wrote such a beautiful, beautiful song, and that's his baby, and he should put his baby wherever he wants.
He'll find some use.
Yeah, sure. I just hope I get to sing it. That's all.
Good night! Good night! Parting is such sweet sorrow!
Hi, I'm Howard Sherman, noted theatrical pundit and raconteur, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
The words of truth you've written from your heart.
If love is a sickness, then find me no cure, for 'tis only love that I know to be pure.
Then they'll think.
Where can you RSC the RSC? This week we begin our fall of 2015 tour, performing the complete history of Comedy Abridged and the ultimate Christmas show Abridged in Pennsylvania, Georgia, Virginia, California, Louisiana, North Carolina, Missouri, and Kansas. And then next April and May of 2016, we'll perform the official Reduced Shakespeare Company premiere of William Shakespeare's long-lost first play Abridged at the Folger Theater at the Folger Shakespeare Library in Washington, D.C. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information.
John, you were saying sometimes, do you have benchmarks in the show, like early on, like a line in an early scene where you go, this is what this audience is going to be like tonight?
It's got to hate Shakespeare for me. Like sometimes you can feel the glee from the audience when he starts to sing that. And then sometimes you can feel. You can feel that a little bit. And it's just a funny feeling. It's just a feeling. It's probably not even true. But there's some nights where you can tell that people are like, God, I hate Shakespeare. Like, bring it. Let's do this.
We hate him too. Like,
I've heard this was silly. you can just feel like they're going to be there.
Silly, and that's another subjective thing. It's the same. We were talking about this, Brad. Right. You know, a review will say, oh, it's sophomoric. I hated it. And or it's, oh, it was sophomoric. I loved it.
Yeah.
Right. You know? And it's that kind of a show. You can't be a snob. Who's a snob about comedy? I mean.
But as always, don't you think comedy always gets a short shrift that way as far as being recognized in its purity as an art form, whether it's a film? You know, every year we talk about the Oscars. Always go to the important, heavy, whatever. How many great comedies do we, see every year that don't get the same kind of respect?
Right.
I think it's the same with musical comedy because it's easy to sort of dismiss it in that way. And it's more difficult to see the bones behind it and the structure and the work that has gone into it. And it should be.
Yeah.
And it should be. But I would hope that any real discriminating theater goer really gets that our show has really good bones and is really pretty smart behind all of this frivolity and silliness. And it does make you a little crazy when people write it off that way because it just dismisses all of the work that has gone into it.
If it were that easy, every show would be as good.
Exactly.
No, it's something I thought was incredibly, not only just smart, but it was, as I said to you, John, it was stupid in all the great, glorious ways. Mm-hmm. But it was smartly done. I mean, and you were talking about the pace of it. You guys weren't lingering over reactions, which is like, oh, somebody laughed up in the balcony. I'm going to hold. Right. Oh, shoot, they stopped. You weren't doing that at all. It was a fast show. Is it even 2 hours?
Yeah.
Maybe it's just.
It's a little, with intermission.
It zips along. It really zips along. And there is no slow ballad in the second act.
Thank God.
We got rid of that.
There actually aren't really any solos, if you think about it. You have a solo, but it's a very active solo.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't any solos of...
Nobody stops to reflect.
To reflect. And,
Nor do we want the audience to have time to stop and reflect. In that way, you want to keep one step ahead.
Oh, yeah.
With this kind of
comedy. Don't let them think. Yeah. God knows. You know, somebody said to me, he said, I saw something wrong and I really liked it, but when you think of the flimsy story it's hung on, it's like, have you read any Shakespeare? Yeah. You know, talk about some flimsy plot lines to hang a lot of great language on.
Sure.
You know, there's...
It just feels like something to say. I mean, I feel, you know, it's okay. I mean, it different strokes for different folks. And I think we did get a lot of that, you know, our show is frivolous and silly. But I'm like, yeah, our show
yeah, it is
frivolous and silly.
Yeah.
But, like, I liken it to Bugs Bunny cartoons. If you, like, when you your first pass of a Bugs Bunny cartoon is that it's just this delightful little romp. But then if you go back, especially as an adult, if you go back and look at those things, the construction of those things, I mean, it's really pretty amazing. And the clip that it moves, mm-hmm. I mean, it's really pretty unusual. And our show feels like that to me. It feels delightful, but it's actually, the construction of it is so complex.
Yeah.
So, and comedy is hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, you'll hear actors say that over and over again.
You know when you fail.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it's binary. They laugh or they don't laugh.
Yes. Yeah.
And regular podcast listeners are going to think I pimped you to say that because we use the example of What's Opera Doc all the time as an example of comedy that plays one level to kids.
Yeah,
and then you grow up and you go, oh, my God, there's so much more going on there than I thought.
Right. Well, I think that is part of our show's appeal. And much like those cartoons appeal to such a wide audience, the same is true for our show because it's highbrow, it's lowbrow, it's young, it's old, it sort of is pervasive through race, creed, like we'll get y'all, you know, like nobody is safe.
Yeah.
And I think that's delightful.
Yeah, it really is. All right, the final question, and it's my wife's. Who came up with the New York actor line? Was that in the script or did it come up in rehearsal?
I think it was in the script, right? I believe so. I think that was in the script.
Isn't that great?
It's a great line, and it's a great pun, which Brian doesn't linger on. He just keeps moving,
exactly.
And the people
nobody
who get it get it.
Well, and that's one of those things that will, you know, get a reaction some nights and not so much the other.
Yeah.
It's a sophisticated joke.
Yeah.
Not everybody's going to hang their hat on that one, but I love it that you did. And Brian D'Arcy James is a comedic genius, as well as, like, such a great serious actor as well. I mean, he's really very, very special. And I don't think there's anyone in our cast that lingers or indulges. I mean, everybody's so good and they, like, stab and get out. You know, we all know we don't want to overstay our welcome.
Right.
And that's comedy being hard again. If you linger, they'll turn on you. Mm. So you got to, like, make the joke and get out.
Again, that's another. Are you sure you've never worked with us before?
Nah.
Because in the complete history of Comedy Abridged, that's the line we use: get in, get the laugh, get out.
Yeah.
Well, they stay on us. I mean, they come every couple weeks and see it, and we get notes.
Yeah.
The directors.
Yeah.
I don't think Brad gets notes, but I do.
It could happen. It could happen. That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your cut musical numbers via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also engage with us and other fans on Facebook or Twitter, and please post reviews of this podcast on iTunes. Just click on over to iTunes or Facebook or Twitter now. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, aging ingenue Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand, our random fan shout-out this week goes to Peggy Mertz. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Howard Sherman for all sorts of reasons. Thanks also to Michelle Farabaugh at Bono Brian Brown for arranging this interview. Big thanks to Brad Oscar, Heidi Blickenstaff, and John Cariani for sharing their time with me. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 457-1371st of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. Thank you, all of you. This is really great.
Thanks,
we could be done.
Okay.
Oh, and that might even be, if I edit it right, that might even be two podcasts.
Oh.
Podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less.